Welcome back, everyone. I'm so glad to see you again. And we're going to continue our consideration and our discussion of this book, the Bible. We're trying to understand a little bit about this Bible, this book, its message, and to what confidence we can place in this book and its message, even not only just in terms of information, but in terms of its vital message that we mentioned in our last segment about the uniqueness of the Bible, the message of the Bible is universal. It has to do with every human being on planet Earth. It was never written just for one group of people, one ethnic group, one culture, one. It was always about the God, the creator and sustainer of everything and everyone that exists on planet Earth, who had a purpose for the human race, all cultures, all people groups, and that he reveals himself in a way by which we might be reconciled to God individually and across all kinds of cultural differences and through time as well. And so we want to come to a question now, not only the uniqueness of the Bible, but now we want to discuss the idea of the trustworthiness of the Bible. Is what we find in the Bible, and I mentioned before, there are 39 books in the Old Testament that were written before the coming of Jesus of Nazareth, 27 books written after his birth and life and ministry. But what we want to know now is what was written in those books different from what we have today? In other words, can we trust in that these people wrote truthfully in their moment? They described the reality and things that really happened and events in times in which they wrote. Was it accurate? And then the process of transmission. How did these writings get to us now, hundreds or even thousands of years later? And these are very valid and very, very important questions, but the Bible does have answers. But first, let me ask one quick question here. Why a book in the first place? We live in time and space, and information is passed from generation to generation. Yes, there's a great deal of oral tradition. I've told my children about how their mom and I met and things that happened and where they were born. They happened to be born overseas. And I've told them a little bit about that oral tradition that they picked up. But when we're talking about this kind of revelation for all of humanity, oh, yes, we have stories that were passed that were from generation to generation very accurately. And we should not snub our noses or look down our noses at oral tradition. We know how crucial it is to a people group, to a tribe or a community of people, to pass on the legacy, the heritage, the history of our people and our group. We know that and understand that experientially from a native perspective. But the same thing we see in humanity at large, we see stories of creation and stories of man's expansion and experiences on planet Earth. Some of those early stories passed on by tradition through centuries, through generations, but then ultimately finally written down. Because we live in time and space, we need a record. And we need what we're asking for now is, can we determine that this record is accurate and true? I know I grew up myself in an orphanage. Later in, I was placed into an orphanage where I lived with 400 other boys taking care of us. And I've noticed through the years that as some of us get together and we talk about our background and our experiences, we remember things differently. And so a record would be important. And sometimes we can find records and information. Sometimes we find other witnesses to those events, and we kind of set each other straight. And so the idea becomes, how can we know, I'm trying to place that kind of a perspective on the Bible. How can we know the Bible is accurate in what it says and that the text has been passed to us accurately and correctly over the centuries and through time? Now, in the first place, we have more than a book. God has revealed himself to human beings all over planet Earth from the beginning through what is called general revelation, through creation, through consciousness, the unique human awareness that we have of ourselves that places us and separates us from the animal kingdom and that we are aware of our surroundings and we don't respond instinctively to our surroundings. We are able to step out away from our surroundings and we can analyze and reason and say, if I do this, this is going to happen. If I do that, this is going to happen. So we have that gift of consciousness, self-awareness that is part through which God has also revealed himself to us. We have longings. We have desires. We have instincts that we long for immortality. We have longings and instincts about relationships and things that come from our special awareness and consciousness as human beings. So you have creation itself, the sun, the moon, the stars, the seasons that give us evidence of a creator, of an intellect behind them. We have our consciousness, which also intuitively leads us to understand that that if we are created in God's image, as the Bible said, that if we have reason and perspective, that the one who made us would not be less of a person. He also would have intellect and understanding. So that he would be a personal, knowable God in the sense that we are because of that special consciousness and awareness and that tendency to relationships that we have as human beings. And then finally, the final C, creation, consciousness, and conscience, good and evil, right and wrong, comes to the question of, and every culture in all of the world has a sense of ought. There are certain behaviors and attitudes that we consider to be laudable, that we consider to be right and good. And we teach our children those, and we warn our children against the other values and against the dangers of not following those ideas, those things that we are said to be good. So we have good and evil. We have this sense, but where does that come from? And this awareness then of the conscience, human conscience, we believe is also an evidence that there is a lawgiver. If we think there is goodness and even there is a law, there must be a lawgiver, that the goodness flows from the character of the one who created us. So those are general revelation. But now we have this idea of a book that God has involved himself in the lives of human beings. They have come to know him and experience God. And then they have written down a record of their experience individually and as groups, as families, and even as nation or people groups. They have written down a record of their involvement with God, both their successes and their failures, the victories and their losses. But they have written them down accurately for us. And that's, of course, one of the reasons we believe it to be true is because it involves, if you read the Bible, it's not a fairy tale. It tells everything good about us. It actually is a description of the experience as it is, the good and the bad, the failures and the successes. Well, historians have this question as well about all records of antiquity that come to us, whether it's the records, ancient writings of the Iliad and the Odyssey or other ancient writings that have come to us. And they wonder, okay, how can we evaluate those to see not only their truthfulness and accuracy, but the way they have been transmitted to us? There are three tests that basically historians use. We cannot go into deep depth on these just from time constraints, but these are tests that are applied to all different texts and documents that come to us from ancient times. They're called the bibliographical tests. Then there's the internal tests and the external tests. And then we can add another now with archaeology. We can add another exam that we can apply to these different texts and documents. Now, the bibliographical test, it sounds complicated, but it really is very simple and straightforward. What about the process that these books were written in? What is the context? What's the process, the time in which is written, the accuracy of what was written, and then particularly and especially the process by which these documents were transmitted forward? How were they copied? What care was taken in their copying? Any particular special care? And are there safeguards that we can apply to them to see that, to tell whether or not they were changed? So the bibliographical record has to do with the number of the number of copies that were made, how they were made, and then I've got to tell you this. sometimes we think that the Bible has, there's so many copies and so many different versions that would be a disadvantage. But in terms of the historicity of the book, the Bible, the number of existing copies is actually an advantage, because it's by comparing these one with another through history, through the centuries, we can get a good understanding, a very clear understanding of if they were changed and to what degree they may have been changed. Of course, if you're talking about writing, you're talking about language. Language does evolve. Language does change from even a generation to a generation. Cool used to mean one thing when I was a kid. It means something totally different now. I think it's more chilling now than in cooling, right? So language changes even in our own times. And over the centuries, then we the bibliographical test traces the transmission of the text, of the biblical text to us today. And so the more copies you have, the better you are able to evaluate the transmission of the text and any changes that might have taken over that time. Now, that is especially true of both the Old and the New Testaments. With the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, they are older. The New Testament was written, 2,000 years ago or 1,900 years ago or so. And there are some tests that we apply from the bibliographical test to that was very close to the writing of the original, the time of the writing, the time between the copies that we have and the actual happening of the event is very small, between the writing of the event and the event itself. And then between the copies that we have and to the original are very small. And so this is a great, great advantage as well. The Hebrew scriptures have a different set of tests because the incredible special care that was taken in copying those texts. And again, we don't have much time to go into the Masoretic text and the traditions and the practices, the counting the letters and counting to make sure that it was accurate and was copied exactly. There are several things that you can read and know about, but that is part of the bibliographical test. And now another test we can apply to this Bible now is the internal test. And that's a little bit more intuitive. In other words, does it contradict itself? Many say that. Over the years, I've heard many critics of the Bible say, well, the Bible contradicts itself. It says, but actually, and many have said that over the centuries, but with more and more knowledge and understanding of the Bible and many of these extant, these already existent copies that have surfaced, like the Qumran scrolls or Dead Sea Scrolls that have come, they have given us greater and greater confidence that some of those things that were thought to be problems have turned out to be not problems at all, but the easily explainable from the perspective of the different writers and authors. So the eternal test is the internal consistency of the scriptures. And we've already commented on this, an amazing, almost supernatural consistency that the Bible has. Then finally, you've got the bibliographical internal. You have the external test, where you compare the writings of the Hebrew scriptures or the New Testament. They're written in Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek, these three languages. You compare what they say happened, the dates, times, places, events, with other historical texts, other historical records that we have. How does it prove to be accurate and true? And that is a test that is applied to the scriptures as well. And over again, it has passed these tests with flying colors. And finally, of course, the archaeology is a relatively new development. I mentioned the Qumran scroll, the Dead Sea Scrolls. We have so many archaeological discoveries, not only about the Bible itself, but about events that took place and dates of events and people. Who was Nebuchadnezzar, the emperor of Babylon, and so on? And who are these peoples? And what time did they live and exercise their reign? And as we examine all these many, many details about the scriptures, we find out that this book passes all of those tests. It is an amazing document that we have, probably a very, not only true and accurate, but true and accurate to such an amazing extent that we begin to see and understand why. One of the reasons it is understood to be a supernatural book. And that's going to be the next topic that we're going to pick up. Not only its uniqueness, not only its accuracy and the truthfulness of it, but then what evidence do we have that this book is actually supernatural in its sourcing? In other words, that it is indeed truly in this sense, the Word of God Himself, the Creator. Has He spoken? Has He acted? Do we have a record of His activities and what He has said, and how we as human beings can be reconciled to Him and know and experience God truthfully and accurately? That's going to be the next topic we pick up.